Are you ready for a whole new way of being in the world? Welcome to Living from the Inside Out with Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is living an 8-plus life. And the numbers to phone to get coaching on thriving in every area of your life, 866-254-1579. Toll free in the United States and Canada, that's 866-254-1579. And outside of the U.S. and Canada, you can reach the show by dialing 001-760-918-4300. And as always, I'm going to set the table for today and talk about what I mean by living an 8-plus life. Now, I'll put all the disclaimers up front. People mock me for how much I pre-apologize for things, but bear with it, because I words are an imperfect form of communication. If I could literally take the feeling in me and put it in you, we'd be done. It'd be very lousy radio, in fairness, unless we had sound effects, like, we could do that, I suppose, but words are what we got. Like, I had a great audio tape when I was in college, and I think it was Ram Dass. It was a recording of a recording, so I don't have the original, but he said, if I could sing and dance for you, I would sing and dance for you. If I could paint you a picture, I'd paint you a picture. But my thing is words. And words are dangerous because you might listen to them. And that would be a mistake. Now, why am I saying all this? Because when I talk about living an 8-plus life, it's very possible to start beating yourself up for only being at 7.5. Or think, right, I've got to create an 8-plus life. More things for my to-do list. Or, well, okay, if I was living an 8-plus life, I would be doing this, so I'm going to do this so I can live an 8-plus life. And it would be totally understandable, but it would also be totally missing the point. So let me make the point so that we'll know if we're missing it or if we're getting it. And I'll start by just talking about where it came from. Every year, my team and I sit down and we sort of review the year just gone, and we look ahead to the year. We actually try and look 18 months out. That just seems to be a friendly time frame for us. And we think, well, okay, how do we evolve? How do we want to evolve in the next 18 months or even transform, if not evolve? And a couple of years ago, the phrase that came up was, what would it be like to have an 8-plus business? And what we meant by that wasn't that every product we put out is an 8 or higher on a scale from 1 to 10 in terms of quality. And absolutely. Do we want to do that? We really want to do that. I really like good quality. I really like things that are proofread well. I really like things that look nice and feel nice, as well as have great content. But what we meant by 8-plus was that our level of enthusiasm for what we were doing was at an 8-plus. Our level of engagement with what we were doing was an 8-plus. Our level of commitment, and by commitment I just mean all in, yeah, we're doing this, was at an 8-plus. And that if it wasn't, then we looked to connect to that. We looked to find that. And if we really couldn't find it, then those are the projects that got dropped. And it meant that a bunch of projects, even some long-standing projects, did get dropped. But what it also meant is that we've been able to do less better. Because the only things we really put our time into are the things that we really are all in on, are the things that make us kind of go, ooh, that's cool. Yeah, let's do that. Are the things that make us smile, as I talk about in Creating the Impossible. They're the things that make us gasp, grin, and giggle. Now, why 8-plus? Why not 10? Well, I don't know about you, and this is just me, but 10 feels like a lot of pressure. Like, 10 is perfect. Like, I grew up in the era of Nadia Comaneci, the you know, the Romanian gymnast who got perfect tens. And that just seemed like a pinnacle that you can reach, but not a place where you can really hang out. And 8 plus is symbolic. There isn't a real scale, right? What is your 8 today might be your 4 in a month. You know, what is your 10 today might be a future 5. But all you've got is now. You know, what's your 8 plus? And you can kind of look at your own life and you can start to see, well, am I all in with this? Am I engaged with this? Am I kind of excited about this? Not in every moment of every day. We're human beings. We fluctuate like mad, right? We thought ourselves. We live in a world of thought. And so, you know, you're not going to always be feeling it. But fundamentally, you know what you're excited about and what you're not. And excited might be the wrong word. I might be at an 8 plus about my cancer treatment, if I'm getting treatment for cancer. I might be 8 plus about caring for a loved one with Alzheimer's, if I'm caring for a loved one with Alzheimer's. I might be 8 plus about righting a wrong in the world, if I see a wrong in the world and I want to right it. So I don't mean to imply that it's got to be fun and shiny and happy, but you got to be all in for it to be an 8 plus. You got to be glad that you're doing it. Now, here's a couple things about 8 plus. Numbers to call if you want to get in. We're going to get to callers later in the show. 866-254-1579. Toll free in the United States and Canada. Outside the U.S. and Canada, 001-760-918-4300. Well, what does it do when you are living with enthusiasm, engagement, and resolve? Like, what does it do for you? What does it do for your work? Well, what it does for you is it means you get to live an enthusiastic, engaged, enjoyable life. That's it. That's all it does for you. But that's kind of cool, isn't it? Now, remember, this is a show called Living from the Inside Out. So it's not, you know, if your question is, well, I mean, how am I supposed to do that? I mean, I've got a job that I hate, but I need the money and rah, 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 rah. And by the way, that rah, 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 rah sound, that's not me mocking you. That's what everybody's inner critic, inner doubter sounds like. That's what the voice of insecurity sounds like. That's what the voice of discontent sounds like. That's what the voice that thinks that your well-being is contingent on your circumstances sounds like. You may have shitty circumstances. I just went and spoke in a prison in Oregon over the weekend. And I was pretty upfront with the guys. I noticed myself say to them, hey, there are some choices you don't have because you're in prison. And nobody disagreed with me. Right? So this isn't about, well, when my circumstances line up, when I'm able to create the circumstances I want, when I attract the circumstances I want, when I am in the relationship I want, when I have the job I want, when my bank balance reflects my inner beauty as I want it to, then I can live an 8 plus life. No, you can live an 8 plus life today. You can live an 8 plus life in prison. You can live an 8 plus life in whatever job you're in or in no job at all, in whatever relationship you're in or in no relationship at all, in whatever state of health you're in or with very little health at all. Because our experience doesn't come from our circumstances. It's an experience of life in the moment, of thought in the moment, of feeling in the moment. I was talking to somebody from Denmark earlier today, and we're having a conversation about goals and dreams. And I shared one of the most significant interviews I've ever had, where I was interviewed, and it, you know, a lot of you know that the Hay House World Summit is coming up, and you know, you can listen in on interviews that I've done with Jack Canfield and Brendan Burchard and Don Miguel Ruiz and Mickey Agrawal and all sorts of cool people. And you can also hear me being interviewed by my dear friend, Dr. Robert Holden. But I was being interviewed for a Swedish magazine. Some of you know this story. And they asked me, they said, what is your 5-year vision for your life? And I thought about it because I thought it was a great question. And I surprised myself with my answer. My answer was, well, I'm really happy and I love my life. So 5 years from now, I'd like to be really happy and love my life. And I get it's probably going to look different to how it looks now. And it does. It did. I'm actually about 6 or 7 years from that interview now. I'm in a different house. We've been through some things as a family that were very challenging at the time, but we've come out the other side with a modicum of grace. My business has been through ups and downs over that time. But I'm really happy and I love my life. So I've reached my goals. Cue applause. Now, it's such a funny thing because I grew up a goal setter, right? I don't know if I grew up a goal setter, but certainly by the time I came to the self-help world, by the time I came to the Hay House world, by the time I came to the psychology and spirituality world, you know, I was a goal setter. I was a goal getter, not a goal setter. And I don't know why a goal setter sounds like an Irish setter to me, but you know, what breed of dog is that? It's a goal setter. Oh, nice. What does it do? Well, you throw the bone and then it chases it because that's what goal setters do. And they attach their happiness to the bone, you see. So, you know, you don't get to feel happy until you get the bone. But then when you get the bone, you get to be really happy, but then you have to give the bone back so it can be thrown again. Because that's how goal setters live, right? Irish setters are just kind of more content. They're just kind of happy to like chew on the bone of happiness and contentment. They don't really care about fetch. Right? Well, we, as best I can tell, are made to be Irish setters, not goal setters. We're made to love life, not to chase happiness. Right? In America, we have this thing that we have the inalienable right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But see, the pursuit of happiness has always been kind of looked at as an outside-in thing, as if our happiness was going to come from having the right circumstances. Well, when we're free from the yoke of the British Empire, then we'll be happy. Yeah, how's that working out for you? I mean, maybe great, but it seems to me there has been still discontent in the colonies since 1789. I mean, I don't know if your perception is different to mine, but it seems pretty clear. See, what if you kind of endowed yourself with certain inalienable rights to be alive, to be free, and to be happy? Now, here's the good news. You're already alive. How do I know? Because I don't think you'd be listening if you weren't. You're already free. And I can say that with more certainty than most weeks because I just came, like I said, from a prison. And the number of guys in there who said variations of who knew I would have to come to prison to learn to be free. Because freedom is our natural state, even if our bodies are in bondage. Even if our bodies need to be, right? I'm not suggesting people shouldn't be in prison. I'm just saying that your spirit is free. Always has been. Always will be. The only person who can put your spirit in jail is you. And we do it all the time. We yoke ourselves to circumstances. We go, well, okay, I mean, when this happens, then I can be free. Or if I let myself just be free, I'd do bad things. We trust the thoughts that tell us we're untrustworthy. If ever there was an untrustworthy thought, it's that one. You don't just have the right to be alive. You are alive. You don't just have the right to be free. You, in your essential form, already are free. Your spirit could not be contained by anything other than a prison of its own making. If its life depended on it, if your life depended on it, because that is its nature, unbound, unrestrained, unyoked. That's how we're made. We're the infinite creative potential of the entire universe. And we're even already happy. That was a big one for me. As a depressed, suicidal kid and teen and adult. I wasn't suicidal as an adult. Just depressed. And I wasn't depressed all the time. But I was a high-functioning depressive. And then I heard this man that I talk about all the time, Sid Banks. I heard him say in a lecture, every human being is sitting in the middle of mental health. They just don't know it. And I got it. No idea why I got it that day. No idea why I heard it so deep that day, but I got it. We were born happy. Right? Babies don't need therapy. You know, their bodies sometimes don't quite work right. You know, sometimes there's something a little off in the brain. But the spirit, the pure love, well, that's working perfectly. If you haven't been around a baby for a while, sometimes hard to remember if you've never been around a baby somehow. It's hard to imagine how much love can come through such a little tiny thing. You can kind of get a sense of it with a puppy or a kitten, too. Probably with a baby elephant, though. I don't think most of us get much chance to hang out with baby elephants. That's what we need more of. We have the right to life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness, and baby elephants. I don't think we really probably have that as a right, but it'd be cool. So if you were already alive, which you are, if you were already free, and at the level of freedom of mind, freedom of the soul, you are, because the only restrictions on that are your own mind, your own thinking, your own sense of, I am not the unlimited creative potential of the universe. I am not of God. I am not of spirit. I am Bob, and I am a, what does Bob do? I am a circus clown, and I have some people who like me and some people who don't, and I really want to be a banker, but damn it, my family were all circus clowns, and they wanted me to be a circus clown too, and now I'm stuck in this dead-end job. Oh, to be able to get up in the morning and put on a suit and tie and not put on makeup and a red nose. Well, that's not you, Bob. That's your persona. That's your conditioning. That's the mask you've learned to wear. The role you've learned to play. The character. That's a character, right? We talk about character as if it's this great thing. You got to work on your character. I was an actor for 20 years. I know all about characters, right? You put them on and you take them off. They're disposable. They're interchangeable. There are some characters you prefer to play. My first job when I was at drama school was to play Lion-O, leader of the Thundercats, outside of toy stores in the coastal towns in Southeast England. In Southwest England, and I would take the train and I would dress up in these kind of muscle suits with the mask, and I would stand outside the toy store and I would go, thunder, 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 ho! And little kids would cry behind their mother's legs. Much, much joy and love would ensue. I don't know. Some people did really like it, and it certainly made noise around the toy shops, which was the point. But that was a character. I didn't really think I was Lion-O, leader of the Thundercats. And one day, they made me dress up as the evil Mum-Ra. And kids cried, and they came up, and they kicked me, and they threw things at me. Because I was evil. But that wasn't me either. So while I preferred to play Lion-O to Mum-Ra, I kind of knew I was neither pure good nor pure evil. I was neither the cat that had been sent to save... I don't remember what the name of the Thundercat universe is anyway, but to save the Thundercat universe, nor was I the evil one sent to destroy it. Those were just characters I was playing. What I was, what was underneath the mask, underneath the costume. Look, we're all wearing skin sacks, right? We're all carrying around a body. But we kind of know we're not that. We kind of know we're not our physical form. But we sometimes fall for the idea that we are our thought forms. We are the character we habitually play. I'm not God. I'm not that. I'm Bob the Circus. I'm just Bob the Circus Clown. Well, good news and bad news, Bob. The good news is you are the unlimited creative potential of the entire universe. The bad news is you really do have the ability to fool yourself into thinking you're just Bob the Circus Clown for years at a time. But see, there's something in us that knows. There is something in us that's wiser than we are, that isn't fooled by the character and the costume and the makeup, no matter how good the character and the costume and the makeup are. That can see through it. Maybe we see through it in others more than we see through it in ourselves. And maybe we see through it in ourselves more than we see through it in others. Maybe we recognize that we kind of know when we're being a jerk and we just don't know what to do about it. But we don't notice that other people kind of know when they're being a jerk and they don't know what to do about it either. And we think, no, they really are a jerk. I mean, I don't want to be. I know I am sometimes, but I don't want to be. They really are one. Well, no, they're not. Right? And it works in the other sense, too. Well, you know, I'm really great. You know, I mean, they're just pretending to be great. Well, look, if you're like every other human being I've ever met, you are both the infinite creative potential of the entire universe and a neurotic body sack of impulses and insecurities. And that's not a problem. That's called being human. We're both. And you don't become more one by trying to kill off or ignore or pretend the other doesn't exist. You don't become more spiritual by trying to not be human. And you don't become more human by pretending you're not spiritual. Now, I'm kind of preaching to the choir here a little, because chances are you would not be listening to Hay House Radio if you didn't at some level already sense that. If you didn't at some level already kind of get, well, I know I'm more than my circumstances, my body, my personality, my life experiences to date. But you also are that too. You know, my middle daughter is very into social justice. And we talked a lot over the weekend about identity and how important to some people their gender identity, their religious identity, their character identity is. And I get that. I really do. But that is an entirely different conversation if you think that is all that you are. than if you see that that is a facet of the divine expression that you are. So, Bob, I apologize for questioning your circus clownness. Right? If you're a circus clown, be an 8-plus circus clown. I hope you love it. I hope you're all in. I hope it is meaningful to you to be a circus clown. But you're also more than that. And if you know that, then being a circus clown can be a joyful expression. Being a lawyer can be a joyful expression. Being a banker can be a joyful expression. Being an artist can be a joyful expression. Being a radio show host can be a joyful expression of that. You're not stuck with your character, but you get to play it. Now, why live an 8-plus life? Like, what's the point? I mean, other than the joy and the love and the fun and the, you know, higher quality work that you do and the fact that people are drawn to you because you're kind of so alive and kind of lit from within, and they're, that, you know, they can kind of see you and go, I don't know who you are, but whatever you're having, I'll have what she's having. And you know, why would you want to live an 8-plus life? Well, there's a few reasons that occurred to me when I was thinking about it before the show. One is that life's just more fun when we're engaged, right? Life's just more fun when we're all in, when we're not sitting there going, I'm not sure if I should be here, or maybe I should be there. I'm at the party, but I should have been at the other party. I'm in this job, but I should be at the other job. I'm in this relationship, but maybe I should be in a different relationship. I'm not saying that you might not want to change jobs, relationships, places where you live, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I'm saying that there's something that happens to us when we're fully engaged that's mostly what we want in the first place. Right? The satisfaction, a huge part of the satisfaction people look for in a job comes from being engaged with whatever job you're doing, even if that job is searching for a job. An amazing part of the fulfillment people are looking to find in the right job, the right work, actually is yours when you throw yourself into the work that you're doing. I had a mentor, Bill Cumming, dear friend. He's got a TED talk that's name completely escapes me, but if you type Bill Cumming TEDx talk, I'm sure it'll come up. And he used to talk about Dr. E.E. Lim. He said, Dr. E.E. Lim can cure what ails you. And E.E. Lim stood for energy, enthusiasm, like it matters. And what he meant, what he was pointing to, is that if you engage with anything with energy, enthusiasm, and like it matters, you tend to have a really rich experience of it. And you tend to do it really well. Like, I used to clean our deck about once a week. And I remember, I don't know if it was Bill or if it was Nina, my wife, who pointed out that if you looked at me cleaning our deck, it looked like I was walking death row, right? Like, this was the green mile. This was the walk to the gas chamber. And one day, you know, Bill, it was kind of a piece of homework for a program I was doing with him, you know, said, well, you know, your homework this week is to take a repetitive task that you hate and to do it with energy, enthusiasm, and like it matters, like it's the most important job in the world. And I just didn't want to do that, but I knew I was going to clean the deck anyway, so I kind of chose that because that kind of seemed to fit the bill. And to my surprise, after the first 5 minutes where I was kind of totally just faking it and like, okay, yay, I'm cleaning the deck. Cleaning the deck is fun. Here we are cleaning the fun deck. Right. You know, I didn't, my heart wasn't really in it. My heart kind of got into it. It became an 8+ in my world. And I wound up for the first time ever kind of getting excited about watching the deck get cleaner and seeing the before and after. Like, I don't know if you watch those home improvement shows, but we're kind of addicted to House Hunters International, and they always do the before, after, and you know, you see what it looks like after they've moved into their dream house. And it was kind of cool. I was kind of having that experience cleaning the deck. Now, here's what's interesting. Not long after that, we replaced the deck with a deck that didn't need cleaning. Because ultimately, I didn't want to spend my Saturdays cleaning the deck with a, you know, with a broom and a mop. But in a funny way, it was only after it had become an 8+. It was only after it had become something that I kind of enjoyed doing that it was obvious to me that it was a silly thing for me to spend my time doing, and that we'd be better off with just a deck that didn't need so much maintenance. So we didn't change it to get out of pain. In fact, when I found it painful, it just was another burden, another cross to bear. But when I didn't mind it anymore, when in fact it was kind of fun, then it was also easy to see that it wasn't practical. Because it wasn't about me anymore. And that's one of the reasons to live an 8+ life, is because change will become not only inevitable, but obvious. Right? It just becomes like, why would I keep doing this as part of an 8+ life? Or why wouldn't I just love what I'm doing as long as I'm going to be doing it anyways? Like, what's the point of having a lollipop and not licking it? What's the point of having a chocolate bar and not eating it? Well, I don't have lollipops and chocolate bars. I have ammonia ice cream, and I don't know, the analogies aren't coming today. But like, you'll find that if you take a fresh look at that ammonia-flavored ice cream, it's really a lollipop. It just looks like an ammonia-flavored ice cream thing, cone, when you first look at it. Because you start to get different eyes for life. The writer Proust, Marcel Proust, said, the voyage of discovery is not in seeing new things, but in looking with new eyes. Well, part of living an 8+ life is just looking at the life you've already got with new eyes. It's not about making a list and, okay, I'm going to stop doing this and start doing this. I mean, you can do that. Don't get me wrong. You can absolutely do that. But you can start living an 8+ life today without anything in it changing. Why else? You know, besides all that, why else would I live an 8+ life? Well, because everything is easier when you're all in. Right, people talk about commitment in relationships. And they usually talk about it from a fearful place. Oh, you know, my girlfriend, my wife, my partner, my boyfriend, my husband, my partner, you know, they're not, you know, they have commitment issues. You know, they don't feel safe in a committed relationship, or they only feel safe. They won't feel safe until we're married, until we're committed, until. But see, to my mind, the point of commitment, the point of being all in, is because you're in a different marriage, you're in a different relationship when you're all in. It's not about safety, it's not about security, because things happen, people change. It's about presence. If I'm not all in on our relationship and I get upset with you, now I'm questioning the relationship. I'm like, well, you know, I don't know. I mean, You know, if I was with the right person, surely I wouldn't feel this way. If I was in the right person, would surely know not to do that. If I was with the right person, they would have known to buy me this for my birthday or Mother's Day or Father's Day or whatever day it happens to be. But see, when you're all in, then the question is, hey, given the person I'm with, given what's going on here, how do I love it? How do I have a great life given this person? I mean, it's a funny thing to say in modern times for a Westerner like me. But, you know, there were certain perks to arranged marriages. Now, there were a lot of problems with them. I'm not suggesting we go back, right? This isn't a retro political statement. But the perk was you didn't spend all your time wondering if this was the one. If you wanted to have an 8-plus life, you spent your time figuring out how to have a wonderful life with the one you were with. Now, that's a very different paradigm. That's a very different model than modern romance. You know, than, well, we married for love. And I'm all for that, by the way. I married for love. If mine was an arranged marriage, it was arranged by God, like it was arranged by the divine. But there's no question that the reason I'm still happily married 30 years later is because we're all in. Because we aren't continually questioning, should we be in a relationship? Would we be happier in a different relationship? Because it doesn't look to us like the relationship and the other person are the source of our happiness. We were born happy. And we've really learned to enjoy the hell out of each other's company. I've learned to show up to Nina with fresh eyes most of the time. And not see the version of her that I carry around in my head and occasionally argue with about doing the dishes. Like, turns out hanging out with the real woman is awesome. Hanging out with the one in my head, not so great. And it's true with everything. Right? You can make up versions of the future that are really scary and horrible and depressing. Like, I worked with a guy who's a pop star, kind of more of a rock star, aging rock star. He's in his 40s, I think, maybe early 50s. And he'd always been a lad, you know, he'd always been a player. And he said to me, he said, you know, I'm beginning to think that maybe I'm kind of getting to an age where I might want to consider committing. I might want to consider getting married. And I said to him, well, great. So tell me, you know, what do you think that would be like? And he couldn't really answer it. And I said, well, okay, imagine it's a year from now and you're happily married. Like, you're really loving. I didn't say you've got an 8-plus marriage, but I could have said you've got an 8-plus marriage, right? Tell me about it 1 year from now. And he said, well, we still have sex sometimes. And, I mean, you know, we don't always argue. And it was like, the version of what a committed relationship looked like in his head was so miserable that it was, A, no wonder that he wasn't in one, but B, amazing that he thought he wanted to be. Now, when I pointed that out to him, he was able to kind of look again, because he thought it was funny once I pointed it out to him. He hadn't even noticed it till then. And it took a couple of years, but he's been in a very happy, committed marriage for a while now. And I mean, I'm not there, but from what I can tell, they still have sex sometimes. And they actually like each other a lot. And that's kind of all it takes. Well, why else live an 8-plus life? I mean, it sounds okay. I mean, the happiness, the joy, the loving your life, the being more effective, the connecting more deeply with others. I mean, that all sounds good, I guess. But why else do it? Well, because when you're all in, when you throw yourself into your life as if your life depended on it, even though you know full well that it doesn't. Because you can half-ass your way through life. You've probably done it for years. I know I had. Where you live your life tentatively. I had a television director I worked with once. He used to kind of scold us and say, you know, who here wants to have tentative sex? Of course, nobody would raise their hands. He would go, well, then why are you living tentative lives? Why are you doing tentative acting? And it's because, for me anyways, it had never occurred to me that's what I was doing. I thought I was there. Well, okay, I'm showing up. I'm doing it. I'm here. You know, but I was there like Eeyore from the Winnie the Pooh books. I wasn't there like Tigger. But you know what? Showing up like Tigger was exhausting for me. And I kind of have learned to be there a little bit more like Pooh. And just kind of enjoying the journey, enjoying my friends. Enjoying being there for Christopher Robin when Christopher Robin needs me. Enjoying hanging out with Piglet and looking for honey. And saying, oh, bother. When I can't find it. But then carrying on anyways and having adventures and finding it. One of the reasons that it is so different, an 8+ life, to the way most of us are used to living, is because when we are fully engaged, when we are present, when we are in presence, it calls forth something from us. It gives us access to a deeper intelligence, mind in the moment, wisdom in the moment, a responsive in the moment intelligence. And so life gets easier. Because we don't have to know what to do ahead of time. Because we know that this in-the-moment intelligence will come through. It will let us know what to do in the moment. I couldn't do these radio shows without it. Right, when I started, I told Reed, the head of Hay House. This was back in 2005. It was literally when I was one of the first hosts of when the show first started. And I said to Reed that I reckoned I had about a 12 weeks in me. I had about 12 shows in me. Because at the time I thought you had to plan it. You had to script it. You had to write it out. And I would take hours collecting scripts and things I'd written in the past and quotes that I thought would be good to use and putting them all together and sort of working my way through a show that way. And it was good, but it was very tiring. It was very exhaustive. And I knew my content would be limited because I only knew so much. And to my surprise, I enjoyed doing the show and people would call in and those bits were fun. And then I started to see, oh, I really like this. So I'm going to go learn more stuff so I can do more shows. Maybe I can do 24 weeks. And not have to stop after 12. And so I would literally go out and get books to get ideas and to inspire me for what else I could do. And I would do kind of commentary on books and things like that. And then one day, for a reason that I don't remember, like I genuinely have no idea why, I was late to the show. I didn't have time to do my scripting. I probably was flying in from somewhere. And I just suddenly went, oh crap, my show's in like 15 minutes. And I went, what am I going to do? I don't have anything. But I was in, right? I was doing it. I wasn't going to cancel the show for whatever reason. And the music played It's different music than the one we get now. It's the music I use on my podcast now. If you haven't listened to it, check out the Caffeine for the Soul podcast. You can find it at michaelneal.org, or you can just type Caffeine for the Soul podcast into iTunes. And the music came out. 1, 2, 3, hit it. I can't sing it. But, you know, so the music started playing. And I opened my mouth. And stuff came out of it. And then more stuff came out of it. And then really cool stuff. Then people called in and I talked with them and cool stuff happened in those conversations. And then those conversations would spur other things and different things would occur to me. And suddenly, I didn't know what I was going to say next. I didn't know what was going to happen next. I didn't know what to do if I got stuck. But I knew something would come. And something has always come to this day. The only time we've really had any extensive dead air on this show is when we got disconnected, which happens from time to time because I live in the hills and the lines aren't always great. But you start to see that's not just a radio thing. That's a life thing. Like, I remember my son taking him out. I don't remember what age he was. I want to say like 17. And he had a date. And he wanted to run through his script for the date with me. I was like, wait, you have a script for the date? And he said, yeah, well, I'm worried that we might run out of things to talk about. So I've come up with a series of questions and responses. So I thought, like, early in the date, like, if here are some things that we could do as kind of conversation starters. And then I thought that I could tell this story and this story, and he had it all mapped out and it was incredibly sweet. But I said to him, Walt, let me let you in on something, right? If you show up and you look at her and you see her, like, you don't look in her direction, but you're so in your head that you don't see her. You look at her and you see her and you open your mouth. I promise you, words will come out and they won't be random. You will not look at her, actually see her and go, fish, toast, fire, right? you'll be semi-coherent. And as you go, you'll be really coherent. And I told him a story about Jim Carrey that I'd heard. The Jim Carrey, the comedian, that was how he first learned that he had that gift, was he just kind of sat down with girls and would just start talking. And he suddenly realized, oh my God, this is gold, the stuff that's coming out of my mouth. And he had a great date, he told me later. But for me, that was the least important thing. Because he'd kind of learned the secret of an 8+ life, which was to show up and know that when you show up, mind shows up with you, this universal mind, this deeper intelligence, this innate wisdom, this responsive intelligence that gives you what you need when you need it in response to whatever's going on, whatever you're up to, right? If you're a plumber and you're working on your toilet, in the moment, responsive intelligence is going to give you insight into toilets and what to do next. It's not going to probably give you insights into circus tricks, right? By contrast, Bob the Circus Clown, as he's engaged with his circus, what comes to mind is cool, funny things he could do as a clown. For you, it may be what comes to mind when you're engaged with your work. What comes to mind is perfect for your work, or when you're thinking about, okay, do you know what? I want to have an 8+ relationship. Well, in the moment, ideas will come to mind that will make perfect sense to you, for you. Even if other people would totally go, no, 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 you can't do that. Even if they're not in line with what the relationship gurus say you should do, they'll kind of make you gasp, grin, or giggle because you go, oh my God, yeah, that's perfect. Or maybe you'll just go, well, all right, it's better than anything I got. Let's try it. And things will unfold because that's what happens. when we start to rely more on mind in the moment, on this deeper intelligence in the moment, we see how freaking reliable it is. And so we relax. We settle down. We stop worrying so much about what we're going to say or do or how it's going to turn out or what if I'm stuck this way for 26 more years and if I start to enjoy my marriage, how am I ever going to leave? Which is funny if you think about it. But I get it. And like my deck, just because you're enjoying something doesn't mean you can't move on to something different. Something that strikes you as even more enjoyable or the next enjoyment. I wrote about it in my first book, and you can have what you want. A client I worked with who had a, you know, came in one day and said, oh, I hate my job. And he'd come to me for help in transitioning from one career that he'd been very successful in to another that was a very hard career to make it in. And he kept not making the leap, and that's why he'd hired me so he could make the leap from this career he was very successful at to this career that was very hard to be successful at. And he thought he needed courage, and he needed this, and he needed that. And so he came in that day, and he said, oh, I hate my job. And I kind of was surprised by that. I said to him, no, you don't. And he said, what do you mean? And I said, I know you. I've known you for a while. You love your job. You love your job more than most people I know. And he kind of saw that that was true. And what it was, and he kind of got this, was he just was afraid that if he didn't hate his job, then he'd never leave it. And I shared a quote with him from a guy named Bruce DeMarsico, who's a one-time Jesuit priest turned sort of self-help guru. And he said, and I'm going to slightly paraphrase here because I don't remember the original, but he said, human beings are the only animals who crap in their own nests to get themselves to move out. Right? And that's somehow what we've learned to do. We've learned that if I can make my present circumstances miserable enough, maybe that will get me to move on. Well, part of living an A-plus life is realizing you don't have to do that. You can just move on when you're ready to move on. You can love what you're doing now and move on to something else. You can love the people you're with and find other people to love going forward. You can love the job you're in and find a different job to love later. You can love being poor and then love being rich. And if you get poor again, it's not so scary because you already love it. And if you get rich again, it's not so scary because you already love that. Living an A-plus life is not dependent on circumstances. It's not depending on you having a strong character. It's not dependent on you getting the details of your life right. It's not dependent on you getting the details of your thinking right. It's not dependent on you being in an optimal state of mind so that just the circumstances that you desire are attracted to you and none of the circumstances you don't. Living an A-plus life is just about loving the life you got and watching it evolve. And if it occurs to you to change something, change it. And if you find there's something you can't change, if you're in a prison and you can't get out, well, then it'll occur to you how to love that prison until it doesn't feel like a prison at all. It feels like a meditation cell instead of a jail cell. It feels like 3 square meals a day in a bed instead of hell on earth. So I hope you've enjoyed the show. You can go to facebook.com/mneil and under the little radio show description, leave some comments about what you've seen and heard during the show today. If you want to learn more, go to michaelneil.org and you'll get to hear about a bunch of seminars and workshops coming up in London. Actually, most of them are sold out, but there's still space live streaming for one on the 15th. And for the conferences in London and Prague And until next time, have fun, learn heaps, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye for now.